tip of scoreboard live. Boa Vista versus Celtic. The night a 33-year wait ended.
Sutton's made the move. Sutton flicking it into Larson. Larson, edge of the box, tries to play it into Larson. Larson's got a chance here. Larson! Go, go, go! Henrik Larson scores! It's a goal! Celtic wants it! They are 1-0 up! They've got the goal! His name is Henrik Larson!
You're unbelievable.
Douglas kicks the ball. It's all over! Celtic are in the UEFA Cup final! What a result in Portugal! The Celtic players are in the air. They're cuddling each other. Bobo Balda is flat out on the grass. What a performance here by Celtic!
I'll tell you what I did do. I watched the last 15 minutes up from the goal, and I put myself through it again, exactly through the whole scenario. And took the extra heart attack even watching it the second time around, you know? So, and the number of times balled ahead at the ball clear in the last few minutes of the game was amazing.
We'll get onto that when it comes around, but we're going to look forward to it. We'll be ready. It won't be easy. They've proved what a good team they are. They give us a doing last season over here. We give them the done them at Parkhead. So, you know, they're only human and we'll be up for it.
Years ago this weekend, a very dramatic game took place. It was the second leg of a game on the 10th of April. We had drawn one each at home to Boa Vista. Henrik Larsson doing what Henrik Larsson did on more than one occasion. He missed a penalty in a key European tie. So we went across to Boa Vista needing a result to reach our first European final in quite some time, most of our living memories. We are joined today by someone who is at that away leg. How you doing, Remy? How you doing?
I'm very good, Brian. Thanks for having me on.
That's all right. So you were at the game before I start. Were you at the home game as well? I better make sure.
I just went to away games. No, I was at the home game, which was, obviously you'd have been there. It was terrible. I don't think anybody knew how to play it because I think we kicked off at 6 o'clock at night, because Porto were playing Lazio and they split the kickoff times, and we got the early kickoff. It was broad daylight. Nobody had been for a pint after work, and everybody was there in suits and ties and things like that. And it was just a weird atmosphere, and we were terrible, and we played no doubt the worst team we'd played since Sudova, and it was an awful game, and the atmosphere was terrible. I think that was the first time you booed Neil Lennon, wasn't it, Harry?
and Anthony's already, he's got his voodoo doll of Neil Lennon there in the background, we can see on Skype. You know, that Valharen's own goal, Larson missing a penalty, it was a catalogue of the heroes of the day becoming the villains on that night. But we went away. So tell us about your life at that moment. What were you doing back then? What was the young Remy McSwain up to?
What was the middle-aged Remy McSwain doing in those days? What was I doing? 2003. Well, I was working for myself at that time, which meant that I was in a fortunate position that I didn't need to get holidays approved. So I went to every away game on the run to Seville, apart from Sudova. And obviously some of them were pretty easy. You know, you could, Liverpool, you could nip down and back in a day or two, and, you know, you didn't really miss a lot of work. I was sitting in the North Stand padded seats in my days as a fat cat, an overweight fat cat. So I decided to...
When do those days end, by the way?
when I moved up beside you in the cheap seats. No, after a while, it doesn't become value for money. And I think there was a game I get pulled up. I get pulled up inside the bowels of Celtic Park for wearing a scarf after the game when we beaten the Huns, and there were some Huns in the lounge. So I think that was maybe the start of the, yeah, I really shouldn't be in here. But in those days, because you were in this sort of business section, you kind of got tickets for away games over other people. I mean, they've changed it all now, but this was back in the day. And to be fair, in those days, we usually only got one away game in Europe, and that was it. But, you know, that year we really, apart from the horribleness of the bowel failure, we really played well. And we actually played better away from home that season, which was something that I never, ever thought I'd see, because it took me a few years to see an away goal in Europe when I was young. So we were actually going to places like Anfield and winning, which was probably of the games was probably our best performance. The Stuttgart game was amazing, although the last 10 minutes were terrifying. And because they hit us with everything.
I can remember turning to my mate who said, calm down, we're going through. And I said, look, I know they need to score a goal every 3 minutes. I just feel it might happen. Bang, they scored. And I was like, oh no.
Honestly, I think the first 10 minutes were 2-0 up, and we're 5-1 in aggregate away. And you can imagine what an away ground in Germany is like. I mean, the place was bouncing. I think we had 11,000 official tickets that night. Plus, there was thousands of the German Celtic fans in the ground, dotted all around the stadium. And the atmosphere was amazing. But as you say, the last 10 minutes, everybody's like, how many more do they need? It was kind of a bit like Lawrence's Partizan Belgrade escapade. You just thought, oh God, surely to God, we can't lose this one. But we held on. That was another great night. The Stuttgart fans were fantastic. And at the big screens, it was, good luck at Anfield Road, because at that time, they'd done the draw for both rounds. So we knew we were going to Anfield after it. And at the time, after we got through that, my dad was going to all the away games in those days in Europe, because he's an even fatter cat than me. He's big game man only, really, now. And he was terrified because he'd made the fatal error. My mum was a teacher, and you can obviously tell she hasn't passed anything on to me, but my mum was a teacher, and she was still working in those days. It was 18 years ago, so she hadn't retired or anything in those days, and the only time they got holidays was the school holidays, as she never forgot to tell us. And they'd booked up their annual spring break in Portugal, but it was the week of the semi-final. So before the draw, my dad was like, they were in the Algarve, they were Albufeira. Before the draw, my dad was like, we need to get the Portuguese team and we need to be away second. So of course, when the draw came through, he was ecstatic, because he decided at that time to take my mum to a European semi-final as part of the romantic holiday break. And he'd booked the bus from Faro to Porto. It was 8 hours.
I was going to say, it's probably one of those things where it's like, I'm just going to go, because it's the same country, you know? Yeah. And it could be like Dumfries to Aberdeen.
And he basically, so he booked a bus for them to go to, from Faro to Albufeira, stopping in Lisbon for an hour or something like that. And as part of a treat, they were going to stay overnight in Porto, because it was too much of a round trip. So they went out, I think they went out the Saturday before the game, and he phones me on the Sunday. I don't know if I'm going to make the game. Your mum, Albufeira's got lots of cobbled streets. She went over her ankle day one. sprained her ankle, and my dad was like, I think his first thought wasn't, are you all right? It was, oh shit, I'm going to miss the game. And then he obviously came to and asked if she was all right. Now, they were really fortunate. There was a doctor staying in their hotel who was a Scottish surgeon, and he plied her with all sorts and bandages. And they decided on the Monday, because he said to me, if I can't go, sell my ticket, because obviously tickets were pretty scarce. Mm-hmm. He said, if I can't go, just sell my ticket. But he phones me on the Monday, we're going to go. We're going to go for it. Right, so brilliant. I'll see you in Porto. Now, I had just gone through my marriage had broken up not a couple of years before. So I was seeing my daughter.
I was going to ask, was that anything to do with going to every single Celtic away European game in that season?
What would make you think that? You mean, I only married a Belfast Hun. I mean, it was so that, you know, there's a mistake there right away. But so anyway, split up, and that was one of the reasons I decided I was going to do anything I wanted. I would go to all these games because it wouldn't upset Andy. So it was my night, you know, it was my night for Erin on the Tuesday, and I've told her I'll name her because she likes to listen to the podcast. She hates football. She hates football, and she never ever got it. But she was, at that time, she was about 3.5, and she was over at mine on the Tuesday, and being a 3.5-year-old wee girl, just terrorising me and the whole house. And that was fine. Never thought I'd know that. I said, well, I'll bring you back something for Portugal, blah, blah, blah. So on a Wednesday night, doing the usual, because I was only going out the Thursday morning, back on the Friday. So on the Wednesday night, I was doing the essential Euro travel pack, you know, toothpaste, scarf, ticket,
Euros. Card, passport.
Well, and there's the rub, passport. Couldn't find it, right? Could not find my passport anywhere in the house. Now, I only kept it in one of two drawers. So you look in the two drawers, it's not there. It's like, I haven't moved it because, you know, the last time I used it was Stuttgart and I put it in when I came back. So looked, hunted about the house, couldn't find it. And my mate phones me, he says, we all set for tomorrow? And I said, I'm struggling because I think we had to meet at the airport at 5 or something like that. I said, I am struggling. I can't find my passport. He says, it's got to be in the house. I said, I know it's got to be in the house, but I can't find it. I said, I think I might have to pull out. And he said, just turn up at the airport and chance it. There's always somebody gets on with a passport. It's Europe. You'll probably be okay. And I decided that's what I was going to do. I'll brass it. And if I get away with it, I get away with it. So I get... couldn't sleep for worrying about my passport. Woke up about 3 a.m. I'll have one last go. And I've honestly tipped the house upside down trying to find it. I've been under the couch and, you know, under the bed. And I was like, you know, places it couldn't be, but you just checked them. And I thought, I'll just remove the cushions from the couch. And lo and behold, where my daughter had been playing on the Tuesday night, my passport had been stuffed down the back of the couch. Don't know how she got it, but that's what she'd done. So I think it was probably her mother who told her to do it. But I found my passport at 3 a.m, got to the airport and was ready to go.
I'm not sure this you can just wing it thing would have worked.
Certainly wouldn't work now, but it might have worked then.
Oh, well, no, I remember my mate and I going to Villarreal. Did we play Villarreal just after September the 11th?
No.
We were going to
September 11th.
We were going to some European trip not long after September 11th, and I always remember my mate getting very agitated because we'd been checked our tickets and passports about 10 times in 2 minutes. And he starts huffing and puffing. And I always remember the air steward saying to him, well, sir, I'm sorry, but that's what happens when the terrorists come out to play. So I'm not sure that you could have just breezed through with it without the passport. So
I was going to try it on the expectation I would fail. And my daughter's, I've only really got one other football anecdote about my daughter. And you'll like this. Oh, you're there, Anthony. You've gone.
No, he's here.
Sorry, my mic was off.
Your I mic switched off my mic for a cough. I've got to turn it back on.
You'll like this one, Anthony. This one will appeal to you. So, Neil Lennon, this is probably 3 or 4 years later, Neil Lennon has retired from playing football and plays a game for Kerrydale Celtic, the forum team at Kilsyth. So I've long retired by then, and I'd given up managing the team. But because he was playing, I decided to go and watch, along with quite a few other photos. It was one of these sort of secret, there's people know he's playing, but we can't really tell anybody. So it was probably 30 or 40 people there, when usually there was only two men and a dog watching him. So I took my daughter to see, well, it was my day to have her, so she was going regardless. So we went to Kilsyth on a freezing Sunday morning to watch the Kerrydale team playing. And Lenny was playing centre midfield, right? And Aaron would be, I don't know, 7 or 8 at that point. And after about 10 minutes, she does her traditional stage whisper. Which one's the famous one, Dad? So I pointed at Lenny standing in the centre circle. I pointed at him and I said, there with the red hair. And she says, he doesn't move much, does he? So that, oh geez, we were in stitches. To be fair, Lenny scored an absolute worldie of a goal that day and didn't know how to celebrate, because he just did things like that so rarely. But he only played one game and they won and he scored. But so that's it. So I was at the airport and ready to go.
So do you want to set the scene, Anthony, for what the world was like at that particular time?
So it's the 24th of April, 2003. On the 7th of April, the US have captured Baghdad. And two days later, the invasion is considered a victory for America and Britain. Can't let got to give Tony Blair his credit, I guess. So we've won in Iraq. Mike Weir, the Canadian, I think, wins Augusta on the 13th, the Masters. 16th, Michael Jordan plays his last ever game in the NBA. Basketball fans will be aware of him. On the 23rd, there's a SARS outbreak in China. So, you know, the more things change, the more they stay the same or whatever.
Which lab did it escape from? Which lab did it escape from? They're at it, those Chinese. It's all a con.
I am watching one of my first ever games in a pub in Glasgow, because I grew up in Dumfries but studied in Dundee, and we must have arranged at the Easter holidays that, you know, me and my Dumfries pals would all meet up. So I've had to literally send a message to a mate and say, where did we watch that game? Because I wouldn't have known Glasgow at the time at all. Apparently we were in The Rock. Does anyone know that?
Yes, that is in Hineland. It's probably about a 10-minute walk from my flat, but it has a reputation. Well, actually, when Aberdeen are in town, that's where they all go and drink.
Right,
the Aberdeen fans, not the players. And I think it has a bit of a reputation for being a hun shop. So you did well that night, Anthony.
Oh, for whatever reason, that's where my mate says we went. So. We were in there, apparently, and I made a big night out celebrating, I guess, because it all went according to plan.
You've given away the ending.
Oh, sorry about that. Yeah. Spoiler alert. Tuning in to hear our misery.
No, that's just every other podcast this year, or we've lost.
Yeah.
Anything else of note in the world?
In the world, not really. Culturally, like I say, it's my last year at university, so I'm very familiar with these dance floor fillers that are in the charts. There was a song called Make Love by Room 5, which had been in a Lynx deodorant advert. Some people might remember that. There's a guy stands up, two pretty women dance with him, yada, yada, yada. It was a big hit.
I remember the song, but I couldn't remember the advert. But what I will say, and again with my mother's yapping in my ear kind of thing, I wouldn't have bought that because of the atrocious spelling of the song.
L-U-V. L-U-V, that's right. That was number one. Inda Club by 50 Cent was number three.
I like the way you really put your
put the effort in to get the pronunciation right, so you really did sound like
I'm just reading what I've written down.
The good thing was he moved his baseball cap and put it on backwards there.
There you go. And Scooter, the happy hardcore group Scooter, were 21 in the charts. Who bought Scooter albums or records?
I think you can tell that the three people on this did not.
Yeah. Cinematically, there's a film called The Dreamcatcher comes out. It was a Stephen King adaptation. Not a classic, but in hindsight, a really good cast. Damian Lewis, Tim Oliphant, Jason Lee. It was a decent film. A film called The 25th Hour with Ed Norton. Yes.
Brilliant. I've seen that. Spike Lee.
Yes, but watching that film back, there's a funny thing, because there's an actor who I think played the mayor in The Wire. And if you saw if anyone watched The Wire, there's this famous, I think it's Clay Thompson, I think his name is, or something like that.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Aye, yeah.
And he famously extends the word shit. He extends the syllable to being like, she, yeah. Right? And it's just a funny thing that people remember from The Wire. But if you go back and watch The 25th Hour, the same actor does the same thing. So it's like when he got cast in The Wire, someone had seen him do that before and said, do that she thing again. That was good, which is weird. But yeah, that's the world in April 2003.
So, Anthony, you watched the game again in full. That's the dedication that you do, the homework you do. So yeah. I'll let you take Remy away through the game, because he will, of course, remember minute by minute, 78 minutes of the most boring football before a shot is on target.
Have you ever drunk Super Bock for a day before you go to a football match?
So tell us, first of all, you then get there. So what's it like? Lots of people listening to this will not have been to an away European game. I have been to an away European game and looked at some people and thought, you could have just saved a number of hundreds of pounds, taken the day off work, got absolutely steaming, watched the game on the telly, been so pissed you forgot about it, and your experience of life would have been no different. So give people a bit of an insight into your comment there about how drunk you might be for a European game, and then Anthony can take it away.
I actually wasn't that bad. I mean, I genuinely wasn't that bad. What I will say is that when we got to Seville, spoiler alert again, I decided not to drink because it had to be. This was going to be possibly one of the biggest nights of my football sporting life, and I wanted to remember every one bit of it. I was drinking in Porto, but we'll get to that later. But I don't know if you guys have been to Porto before. I mean, because obviously we've played Porto in the Champions League a couple of times. It's not the most picturesque city, but it has a beautiful area down at the harbour. So you've got the river flows right through the middle of it. You've got one side's like all cobbled streets and wine bars and restaurants, and then you've got the kind of bridge that looks a bit like the Tyne Bridge, which was designed by Eiffel. Gustav Eiffel designed it. And on the other side of the river is all the port sort of shops and tasting places. So
it's a bit like Greenock.
Well, I think the other side of the water for Greenock's Dumbarton, so that would be a bit of a call and response for come on you boys in green. So you've got the port area on one side, and you've got the actual restaurants and bars on the other, split by a bridge you can just walk over. So you know, being a typical away game, and I think we maybe had 4,000 tickets for that one, because we were getting one stand. Because at that time, Portugal was getting ready for Euro 2004.
Yeah.
So Boa Vista's ground was under construction, so they only had two stands open. So I think we got one stand, and I think we got about 4,000 tickets, something like that. So when you go to these, you'll know yourself, when you go to these games, you see the same faces all the time, because these people do go You know, obviously, Paul the Tim hadn't been born or anything like that, so he wasn't there. But you know, you're seeing this sort of the execs and the fat cats and etc. And both sides of the riverbank are heaving with Celtic fans, and it was all really, really civilised. And I'm, you know, we were sitting outside just having something to eat with a few glasses of wine and a few beers, and yes, we did try port and stuff like that, which I hate, but I tried it. And I'm just waiting on my mum and dad arriving because, you know, I've got his ticket, and I've got a ticket for her as well, you know, big time Aggie. She's never been to a game in her life, and she's rocking up at a European semi-final while there's guys in Glasgow in tears that they can't go to this. So she turns up and she literally couldn't walk. So it was really, really, it was kind of, she sort of shuffled around like Kevin Spacey in The Usual Suspects. She was really, really bad. And it was like the ground was a bit out, because it was out, I think it was out in like the West End. It was out in the very affluent area of Porto. The Porto Stadium, the Dragão, I'd only been in the old one. And, you know, it made Capello look like the San Siro. It was awful. You're out in this beautiful, expensive boulevard with all the designer shops and a big square and the Meridian Hotel, about a 5-minute walk from the ground. So we decide, because my mum can't walk and we don't want to take a chance, we'll get up to the ground earlier and we'll go to the Meridian Hotel for a drink. Now, you can tell right away that's not going to be cheap. So we roll into the Meridian Hotel, and all the Scottish media are staying there. And the players' wives, the wags, the wives and girlfriends. So everybody's singing and dancing the pre-game, and Henrik Larsson's wife and Martin O'Neill's daughter led the huddle and the Celtic song in the middle of the Meridian before the game. So you can tell that people were pretty confident, that because everybody's view was Boa Vista were rotten. You know, they were rotten. They had no flair. I mean, the thing about the Boa Vista team is, if you look through it, I think there was only one international player in their team, and it was the goalie. I think he was the only one you'd heard of, apart from, at the time, Bisingua. You hadn't heard of Bisingua. He was a sub, I think, but he went to Chelsea after he played for Porto. So he became famous after it, but he wasn't famous then. So they had no household names, and, you know, we'd beaten teams with some serious players in their teams. So people were really, really confident before the game. And the other thing about the town was that obviously the Porto fans were kicking about, because they'd won the first leg 4-1. And they were away to Lazio that night, and they were obviously really, really confident. So they were all piling into the pubs to watch the game as we were piling out to go to our game. And met a lot of my mates down near the stadium. It's got a big black bull, a big sort of bull outside the main stand, and we were in there. And I met a guy, I'll name him. Some people will know him, some people won't. He's a guy called Alan Sharp. Sharpie is his nickname. So proper footballer nickname, you know, just put the IE on at the end. So
somebody's nickname, make it longer.
Just make it harder to say. Just put an extra syllable on. So I'd known Alan for a long time. Alan is a heritage boy, but he lived in London at the time. He still lives down south. And Sharpie and I used to cut about, watch games in London, and I was the driver to the great, we went to Cardiff to play Intercable Tel, because that was an easy drive down the M4 for us, sort of, you know, as a London the London CSC. So anyway, I bumped into Sharpie first time for years at the Celta Vigo game, just by pure chance, standing next to him in the ground. And as you probably know, we'd never got past Europe, never got past Christmas in Europe since 79, when we beat Dundalk to get into Europe after Christmas, when you only needed to get through two rounds in those days. and we hadn't got through. You know, we should have got through against Rapid Vienna, but that's another story. But so we hadn't been through after Christmas for 20 years, 24 years. So Sharpie and I stood next to each other in Vigo, and we won. And we made a pact that we would meet each other at every away game till we went out. And we stuck to it. So I met him in, you know, I met him in Stuttgart, and I met him at Anfield, and I'd now met him in Boa Vista. So my sort of omen, my good omens, you know, your these weird superstitions that you have to have at football matches, you know, I'm going to wear my socks inside out and all that sort of stuff. I had achieved my goal by meeting Sharpie. So Sharpie and I stood next to each other, you know, usual. It was a stand, but everybody just stands the whole game. Sharpie and I stood beside each other for the whole game. And we were both feeling pretty confident and really good about it, because he's the same. Oh, I've met you, you're beauty, we're sorted. And as you said, Harry, the game was absolutely atrocious. It was, it's possibly one of the worst games I've ever seen in my life. And I think it was, I think Larson's goal was our first shot on target. And that was 78, 79 minutes.
Well, you mentioned there about the luck things. We'd already, I remember somebody phoning up Clyde, might have been the round before, and pointed out that every team we had played had a V in it, in their name. And of course, the final was in Seville with a V in it. Yep. And this guy was, well, we're going to get there. And I remember Hugh Keevan saying it was utter nonsense. But of course, we then had it with the Boa Vista. So we've had the luck there with Sharpie and the Vs. And we've had to talk about the game. So, Anthony, you managed to keep yourself awake. Take us through the game. Take us through the game with Remy.
It's strange watching the whole 90 minutes is on YouTube for anyone who wants to go back and visit it, although I don't know why you'd want to. One thing that's odd, exactly what Remy was just saying about, well, he was confident, but you know, I come from I'm a child of the 90s, that any European victory is basically a celebration. You know, it's a mystery. So, you know, to have gone through Stuttgart, Liverpool, Blackburn, etc., etc., I didn't expect to win any of those games. So every single time it was a pleasant surprise. And I would have been going to that pub, The Rock, that night thinking, you know, what will be, what will be. You know, I really no expectations. So it's interesting to watch it back. And you almost get more tension watching it back, you know, 20 years later. You know, the BBC and the situation, it really is quite stressful. And that the pressure on the players was absolutely enormous. Whereas for me at the time, I wouldn't have been putting any pressure on the players, you know, because I wouldn't have been assuming we would win it. But you definitely feel it watching back. We go out with the sort of almost exactly what you'd imagine of a Martin O'Neill Celtic team: Douglas in goals, Mjalby, Balde, Valgarin, which is weird because I thought Valgarin fell out of the team shortly after Juventus when Salas roasted him. And it always surprises me when I go back and look at the Seville starting 11 and see Valgarin there, because I genuinely thought he'd faded out of the team. But just something I've misremembered, apparently. Valgarin. And then the midfield five, you know, full pelt. Thompson left, Agat right, Lambert, Petrov, Lennon. And then the one change is obviously Sutton doesn't start because of a broken arm that he's sort of, you know, stop and start coming back from. So Hartson and Larson start up front. It is a stodgy first half. It is a really, really hard game to watch.
Very diplomatic. Very diplomatic.
There's one thing you quickly notice, or as the game goes by, you know, Valharan's first name could be Mistake By. Mistake By Valgarin is said a lot. That is a recurring catchphrase throughout the match. Agat starts quite well. And again, I was always quite a big critic of Agat, but he looks like a better player than I remember him. You know, a nicer touch. Lambert has some nice little drag backs and stuff. Lambert was class. I loved Lambert. One thing you sense from the other team is that they press us quite high. You know, so they're no mugs. They're actually quite good, and they put quite a lot of pressure on us. And certainly one of their tactics, which is a tactic I would have agreed with, basically shoot on sight, their goalkeeper's crap. shoot on sight. So clearly they'd done their homework.
Do you know the interesting thing about when I was looking at this in advance? We fielded 10, five goalkeepers that season. Johnny Gould played 3 games. Magnus Hebben played 10 games. David Marshall played a game. Rab Douglas played a game. I'm trying to think who the
Karim? Dimitri Karim? No?
David, so there was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Yeah, so it was Gould played 3, Hebben played 10, David Marshall played 1, Rab Douglas played the most. But the other one who played in the final league game of the season and actually was starting to play first team football ahead of Rab Douglas by this point, Broto.
Aye. But was he not cup tied for the final or something because he'd played in goals for Livingston or something like that?
Yeah.
I just know he couldn't play. Maybe we hadn't signed him in time, whatever, but he couldn't play.
That's right. And everybody says they were a better goalie would have won the final.
Yeah, Broto played away at Ibrox in the running.
Yep.
Yeah, Broto was a good keeper.
So by around about this time, Broto was playing.
Yeah.
I mean, Douglas, in my recollection of the game, and I have gone back, and unlike you, Anthony, I couldn't watch that 90 minutes again. I watched the 5 minutes of highlights. I watched two different 5 minutes of highlights. I watched the sort of YouTube one, and then I watched, it was a BBC Saturday sports scene thing. I don't know if you've seen it. It's 20 minutes, noon on a Saturday. Rob McLean, Jim Spence, Gordon Smith, who is talking through gritted teeth and a clenched wig. He is struggling. And Chick Young is sitting in the stadium in Seville, in the hotel, drinking a glass of wine, being the usual Chico, and it's just it's cringe worthy, it's embarrassing. But they show the highlights again. So Rob McLean's in the studio, but he did the game for the BBC. And Douglas pulled off a pretty good save fairly early on, but he then had a, I think it was a save from a mistake by Vilharen, you won't be surprised. he then in the second half comes out for one and completely flaps and misses it, and we got away with it. But that was the unfortunate thing with Big Rab, was he always had a mistake in him, and you know, he probably cost us a couple of goals against Rangers that year, and he certainly had he saved his worst game for the final, no doubt about it. He was a nice big guy, but he just was never top quality, and that was one of Martin O'Neill's biggest weaknesses. He could never sign a goalie. And you saw when Strachan came in and we got Boric, the difference in standard was just unbelievable.
So back onto the game, Anthony.
Little commentator comments you kind of forget about. Mjalby missed a lot of games that season, apparently. He was sort of coming back from an injury, which, you know, I'm not really recalling. Lambert goes off relatively early on. He picks up an injury in the first half, 32nd minute. I don't know if he rolls it or someone catches him. So Lambert goes off and Sutton, you know, drops into that, I guess, that midfield position that he played against Blackburn, which is bad news for Petrov because it means Petrov has to come back and do a lot of, you know, he was in the 10 as such. Petrov does a crazy amount of running, you know, which we kind of all remember, but we kind of remember him, you know, doing intelligent attacking running, you know, third man running, getting goals out of it and stuff. But, I mean, what a sweat he puts on. Just box to box, left to right. Basically doing all of Lennon's running for him, I guess. a proper shift, though.
It's not going to be the most mobile of midfields with Lennon and Sutton playing in it, is it?
Yeah. So, yeah, Pedro's doing the job of three, basically, but doing it well and getting kicked about. You know, they've clearly identified he's a threat, and they're booting him up in the air every opportunity. Lennon plays well. You know, Lennon was good. He was hard as nails. He gets in a good sort of one-on-one battle with a guy called Duda, which he's, you know, he's going to come out on top of. And the one thing that I don't enjoy about watching this game again, I'm a child of the 90s. I'm a Tommy Burns fundamentalist. That's the way football should be played. And Alan Thompson's penchant for the diagonal ball is just so low percentage and so frustrating, and so it really gets on my nerves trying to watch. I mean, it's a bad game. Nobody's playing well. But the guy with the ego just to get it out of his foot and hoof it into the box at every opportunity when nobody's there. I know Hartson's good. I know Hartson's strong. I know Larson and Sutton will win their headers. But it's just caveman in football. And it's not pretty at all. So it's kind of like an old prejudice that I'm seeing justified whilst watching this.
Tremendous in the word penchant, though. I will give you that.
it's an interesting one because we all worship Larson so completely. It's not his best game, it's not his worst game, but it's one of these games where nobody plays well, like all 22 players.
Yeah,
it is just a battle, and it seems summed up just to jump to the end. Neil Lennon's post-match interview, he says, "I feel like I've just been through a boxing match," and it's you could never agree more. It's exactly what every player on the pitch's experience was. It is an absolute brawl.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, I don't think I thought they played for a nothing each draw, because they had the away goal and they were well organised defensively. They were strong defensively. They had no real, or appeared to have no real attacking flair. And a 0-0 draw obviously suited them. And I think they were a bit cautious because, Celtic had drawn a lot of games, won each at home and then gone away and won, like at Anfield, for example. So they were a bit wary of us. And as you said, they were very wary of Larson and Petrov. But they felt they could get a 0-0, and they just reduced it, as you said, to a boxing match. It was just a battle. It was just, I'm sure the ball was delighted at a half-time whistle to get a 15-minute rest. It was just getting, as you say, bluttered everywhere. There was no skill, there was no flair, there was no chances created. And I have to be honest, my pre-match confidence at half-time was a bit like the ball. It was totally deflated. I just thought, Where's the goal going to come from? Because we had to score. And you're child of the 90s, Anthony. I'm the started going to away games in Europe in the 80s and, didn't see goal. This is like the old days. We've got some really good, we've got some fantastic players in the pitch here, but we're not creating anything. And you're sitting going, well, maybe we'll get a free kick and Thompson can flight one in and we'll sneak it. But you couldn't hand in heart at half time see it. And so by half time, I was a wee bit more, this ain't going to happen. And I had already started my glorious failure preparation, which I hate. But you have to have the plan B and expect it might not happen, which you would like. And then obviously, the goal came out of nothing. And it wasn't, as you said, it wasn't Henrik's best game. It certainly wasn't his best goal. A lucky break of the ball, I think I would be fair to say, kind of sclaffed it because it was his left foot. And I don't know whether it took a wee nick off somebody, but he caught the keeper flat-footed and the keeper made a pig's ear of it and it trundled into the net. And Jesus, celebrations are just unbelievable. There's guys flying over your head and specks going flying and a walking stick, and I'm like, please not let that my mum's, but it wasn't, thankfully. But there's bodies, and you hear this horrible phrase, limbs, there's people flying about everywhere, hugging the strangers, and then somebody always says that stupid thing, they go, I wonder what it's like back home. And you're like, every single person back home is wishing they were here right now. It's like it's mental, and then you go, how long to go? And I think there was maybe 11 or 12 minutes to go, and there's going to be injury time, and you're sitting going, oh god, well, worst case we should get extra time here, worst case. And the thing about it is it seemed to flick a switch in Boa Vista in that they had nothing to lose. And all of a sudden, they actually looked as if they maybe did have a bit of flair and they had some good creative players and they could actually attack. And that last 10 minutes, I mean, the only game I've ever felt 10 minutes go as long as that is when we played Aberdeen in a second replay at Dens Park. I think it was 84. McClure scored. We won. We'd drawn it. Pataudry drew it Parkhead and the neutral venue for the second replay. Remember the days? Dundee on a Monday night, pissing rain, open end. McClure scored a beauty. And honestly, I have never, a clock, Aberdeen battered us the last 10 minutes. And you just think, this is never going to end. 10 minutes seems like half an hour. And that's what I felt there. And there was a couple of heart and mouth moments. But there was one when Agat went to ground. And he, well, from where I was, I thought he'd get the ball. But the guy went flying. And you just go, well, it's us away in Europe. That's a penalty. But the ref, who I've no idea who he was, I don't think it was one of the famous ones, he didn't give it. They went ballistic, but we got away with it. And you just thought, they're not going to score. They're not going to score. Just blow the whistle. Just blow the whistle. And he did. And the players, geez, I mean, they just really, really went. They celebrated like there was no tomorrow that night.
I was at home. And those last 10, 15 minutes just lasted forever. And the thing, your comment there about the penalty, the thing that I just remember was there was a couple of occasions and the penalty was won where you just thought, we are through to the UEFA Cup final here unless we muck up. How have we managed to create a set of circumstances where they are through behind us? You know, surely we should have all 11 men basically camped in our box, just creating no space. I couldn't comprehend how they managed to have so much space. Anthony, you've seen it since, or have you seen it in the replays, in the TV stuff? Was it a penalty?
In my notes, I've just got 87th minute penalty question mark. So I think I was sitting on the fence. I was hoping one of you guys would know.
What you're saying is if there was VAR, we were in trouble.
I think that's exactly what I was thinking, watching these highlights. One thing that's hilarious, I mean, we all remember how cheating Mourinho's Porto was in the final. One thing, I don't know if you're aware of this in the stadium, Remy, as soon as the second half starts, all the multi-balls disappear. The Portuguese hide all the multi-balls.
Did they not substitute a few ball boys as well? I think a few ball boys didn't make it back out from the half-time pie. Everyone just seemed to be slow motion in the second half and, you know, shies taking a wee bit longer than they did because they'd set up for 0-0 and they were happy with 0-0. They were through. I think they all came back out though when it went to 1-0 us.
Exactly, because it's Martin O'Neill and, you know, the board, the bench are literally complaining. It's like, where's all the balls? You know, yeah. These guys are at it. And the Portuguese are just shrugging their shoulders. What balls? There's only one. It's football, isn't it? And eventually, it's hilarious. As soon as that goal goes in, you know, it's like a wave of new staff appear and new balls and, you know, everything gets quicker. So it really is. It's eye-opening to see what they were up to.
At the end of the game was, I mean, there's a mixture of, well, it's not really, everybody's, it's absolute elation and jubilation, but there's also that thing, the strange things that, you know, guys from Glasgow who don't cry about anything, you know, don't cry at their mum's funeral, all burst into tears because there's been a game of football won, and there was floods of tears everywhere. It was just happy tears, I will say, but I think for all of us, I mean, Lisbon, you know, Milan had been 1970, so I think that was 23 years ago. I was a wee boy, no recollection of it. And this was like, oh, I had never, having been that child of the 80s and, you know, seen as getting thrashed in Europe, to actually think that you were going to go to a European final and see us in it and actually really think you had a chance of winning it. We weren't going as underdogs. And you're thinking, this is just unbelievable. You know, before Martin O'Neill came, we were a shambles.
Yeah.
You know, so it's shambles.
And that's the thing that, that people need to remember. For people of our age, we've gone through our life being told we will never see Celtic play in a European final.
Correct. Correct.
You know, the experts told us. Actually, I always go on about a few seasons earlier, Rangers had been knocked out by Feyenoord in Europe. It was like 3-2 away or something like that. Yeah. I always remember, it was the season before, might have even just been the season before. I always remember seeing a Rangers fan said, do you know what? I think one of us could reach a European final. I don't think we're as far away from the ability of being able to get to a UEFA Cup final as people are telling us we are. That was actually because we'd also had we'd been unlucky to get knocked out by Valencia UEFA Cup on penalties, and you suddenly thought we're not a million miles from being able to compete with not maybe to get to a Champions League final, but with these teams. And yeah, it was just a remarkable stuff. Anything else of note in the final 15 minutes of football, Anthony?
Valharen gets hooked. So I guess Val Harrigan must get hooked when we're still chasing the goal. Lennon drops back and Jamie Smith comes on. Jamie Smith doesn't do much, but you know he tries to get involved because, yeah, it's basically we've made that aggressive change and then we've scored straight away. And then it's like, all right, what do we do now? You know, now this team's set. I guess that explains your explanation earlier that how do you end up with a one-on-one because we were immediately designed to attack. One of the reasons we don't let in a goal is Bobo Baldi. You know, I'm big Bobo Baldi's biggest fan, and this is what probably is his Mona Lisa. You know, just a night of winning headers and scaring strikers and being Bobo Baldi, just an absolute mountain.
I mean, I've not watched that full length highlights back, but that is the one other memory I've got of that game is Bobo Baldi clearing the ball.
Yeah. In the last, you know, that last 8 minutes, because it does roll into plenty of extra time. Credit, Douglas takes a good cross in the 87th minute. I gave him a tick for that, but I've got about 5 ticks for Baldi in the same period. He's just winning everything. There's a funny one where we were discussing about the multi-balls where Stan Petrov tries the "I'm going to kick the ball out the stadium" thing. You know, this'll buy some time completely. You know, and some ball boy just lobs another one to the nearest guy. It's like, all right, that didn't work. These aren't Roy Aiken days anymore.
It'd been even better then because obviously behind the goals was a building site, so the ball would have been gone forever.
But yeah, ultimately that is. I mean, I'd recommend Celtic fans, even actually listeners, just go and scan to that last 15 minutes for an experience. You know, it's unbelievable, you know, just seeing it again, just
nerve-wracking.
Were you like the other day on, I can't remember what channel it was, they were showing the 2-1 against Barcelona with the Tony Watt game. I was nervous watching it.
Yeah,
because you're trying to remember exactly what other things come, and you're just thinking the Barca goal's coming.
Yeah.
And you're up to, are you able to watch it dispassionately with those last 15 minutes, or were you getting uptight watching it?
It is. It's this game particularly is kind of stressful, even though you know you're building up to this happy, you know, the happiest of endings. You know, cause obviously this is better than the final for us. It really is amazing, and you really appreciate. I mean, it's that thing where, you know, if you sit at the back of the North Stand, you can kind. I mean, certainly I do. I can look at a game and pretend I could have competed. You know. On a real field with real players, because it's so far away. But if you're up close, you know, real professional football is terrifying. You know, it's so violently fast and athletic. And this is a game that kind of captures that feeling, you know, from the first minute to the last of, you know, these are real men, you know, busting a gut. This is a real sport. This is a, you know, really is quite intimidating. But, you know, we are, you know, we're giants that night, every one of them, you know, just for the effort. You know, it was a battle that we went into and a battle that we won. So it was amazing.
So what was it like afterwards, Remy?
That was crap. It was just the same again, just elation mixed with relief with the, oh my God, we're going to the European final, and then the, how are we going to get tickets? You know, you immediately go to the next game. And one of my mates who was there, and we were talking to him outside the stadium, and it was all right because he was going home on the flight straight after the game. And he said, I'll have the accommodation booked by like 2:30 in the morning. So I'll text you. Don't worry. Are we going to make a go of it? So we decided we'd make a week of it for Seville. So he said he would sort it. And we'd been at the semi-final. We knew we'd be okay for tickets, because I think we were getting 20,000 tickets. We knew we'd be fine. So obviously, by the time we came out of the game, and the place was bouncing, and I mean bouncing, you came out, all the Boavista fans had gone, because, you know, they'd lost and they were away. And you came out on that big boulevard I was talking to you about before the game, and it was a sea of motorbikes and cars with Porto flags, because they'd all been waiting, and the Boavista fans coming out to get it right up them, because they were going to the final. And it was like flares and fireworks. There was no minute silences or anything. It was just flares and fireworks for happiness this time. And it was just like all the Boavista, see, I snuck that one in. The Boavista fans were, they were all in the pubs. So it was like, well, we'll just go to the first pub we can get to. I'd said to my mum and dad, I'd meet them back in the Meridian, but you're just choking for a pint because your throat is raw, just shouting and bawling like an idiot. And we went to this Boavista, this pub full of Boavista fans. Not a hint of bother, to be fair to them. They were all fine. I don't think they took too well to me. I had the Larson t-shirt on with the big gold 7 in the back. And I did the Lubo Maravchik celebration, you know, with the thumbs pointing at the name and the number. To be fair, I got away with it, right? But they were kind of resigned to their fate. And the guy I was talking to just said it was a terrible game and we probably just about deserved to get through, which I think was a fair assessment. Couple in there, back into the Meridian for a £9 pint, you know, and it was again full of the meat. So Peter Martin was hanging about outside, and I just sort of walked up there. Says, how loud were you shouting the night? And he just went, he says, I just totally lost it at Larson's goal. Interestingly, the first thing I heard when I came back to Glasgow Airport was somebody's ringtone. It was Peter Martin's commentary of the goal.
He just shouts, go, go, go.
He just shouts like an idiot. And he was, you know, Peter Martin is obviously a Celtic fan, you know, which he has to tone down a bit. Davy Provan's face was tripping him, absolutely tripping him. It was almost like he didn't care. Back in, few beers. My dad, in a moment of largesse, had decided to upgrade to the Meridian Hotel with my ma. So she got something out of it. She probably had a decent sleep. Well, I don't know what time he staggered in at, but she was straight in bed and he was straight in the bar. And then me and my mate Ian went back down to the port for the celebrations. A lot of Celtic fans had obviously gone, but it was really good. It was a decent night. Porto fans were all out celebrating. Pubs were rammed. Everybody was like, we'll see you in the final. You know, they were all really nice guys. And we're staggering around this street down to the harbour, I don't know, 3-4 in the morning. And Kerideen Idisan is walking about with a microphone and a cameraman. Right? And he goes, all right, lads. I went, all right, Kerideen, how's it going, man? So he goes, can I just ask you a few words on the game? And I'm like, really? You know, I mean, I was, let's just say I wasn't sober. So he asked me a question about the game. And I have no idea what I said. I just garbled, mangled 2 or 3 sentences. I didn't use the word ponchon, that's for sure. So I don't know what I said. And so at the end of it, he went, can I just ask your friend what he thought? Ian's English. And Ian sobered up and gave a very nice answer. It was really lucid and made sense, and I'm like, oh, I wish I'd said that. And Kerideen says to him, I'm sorry, we didn't get that, can you do it again? And the second time he just sounded like an English version of me, just mumbling and stumbling over his words, completely blew it. So BBC never showed that footage. So if Andy's listening and they've got it, please let me see it, because it must have been hellish. So we didn't make the cut. Back to the hotel. The flight home was tremendous. Just, you know, as you said, Anthony, you're used to coming back for these things with your tail between your legs, but this time we'd actually won the battle, and we all had something to look forward to. And I think it was only 3 weeks later we all knew we were going to a European final. And what a time to be alive.
It was a marvellous time to be alive. It was. I still believe I'm going to get to one of those again. I've got, you know.
I do as well. Not with John Kennedy as a manager, but I do believe we will get to one again. I think probably the Europa League or the one below it, but you have to dream big. And you and I are quite the same, Harry. Is that we don't just want domestic success; we want it all.
Yeah, absolutely, and I think we can have it. I think we can do it. You know, maybe David Proven's face was tripping him, because I look back on, you know, your comment about we only needed to beat Dundalk. You know, we had Burns and McLeod and Proven and Nicholas and McGarvey if St. Anthony was on, and McGrain and Aitken. We and McStay and. In the early to mid 80s, we had players who should have been competing at that level, and we didn't.
Yeah, and if we did two decent centre, if we did the Aberdeen or the Dundee United centre halves, we would have been.
Yeah, and then again, you look at this team actually, and my only regret from the Martin O'Neill years is I think we should have done more of that. I think you know, Larson and Sutton for 2-3 years there, when we had Baldy and Mjalby and Larson and Sutton and Lennon and Lambert and Hartson, we should have and Petrov.
Yep.
You know, we should have had more Sevilles.
Yeah, but the problem was the next year we had, you know, I think who did we sign? Michael Gray or something like that. We didn't sign anybody.
Where did the Seville money go?
I'm not going to do that. I mean, I know they decided that we overdrafts were bad, but they just, you know, we only signed Michael Gray, I think, and we should have got through in the Champions League. We knocked out Barcelona, and then we fell to Villarreal. Now, that's Villarreal were a really good team,
yeah.
But our team was completely on its last legs in 2004, and we also had a manager who wasn't really there.
Yeah,
he was there in spirit, but he wasn't there physically a lot. So the team was, I think Seville ended the team in a way. It was that was the last year of its greatness. And it sounds really weird because we won nothing, but we, you know, we've won nothing this year. And I know which year I preferred.
Well, I'd know very, very few. I mean, St. Anthony's the only Celtic fan I know who would swap this and have had won trophies.
Well, I mean, you know, it's like, what would you rather win, the Europa League or the league? You know, I would have taken the Europa League every time, 100 times out of 100. To be fair, you know, for all Porto's cheating, and there was a lot of it, they were a better team than us and they deserved to win. But for about 15 minutes when we got it back to 2-2, they were really rocking. But we just couldn't really create a... The only, I mean, we were relying on Larson because, you know, he was superhuman that night, and he couldn't do it all for us, and the sending off kind of killed it. But we played well in the final. We scored a couple of goals. You know, that was my heroic failure.
I went to a European final. I saw Celtic score goals.
Yep.
I never, there was a period when I never thought I would do that. I would see that. So,
absolutely, it was. Some of the whole run was some of the best nights of my Celtic supporting life.
Do you know, one of the strange things you were saying about the guy doing it, because the other thing you have to remind people when you're saying, you know, I'll have this sorted, there's no such thing as smartphones. The first camera phone I ever saw in action was away at Blackburn. There's a guy holding up. It was in all the Vodafone adverts with the Man U players. It was this flip phone. Yeah. And I remember a guy holding up and taking pictures. And me and my mate going, Who is going to want to get pictures over the phone? That's just a gimmick. It'll never take off. Who's he sending that to? Because who else could afford one of those phones?
He was sending it back to his mates, who was saying, "I wonder what it's like down there."
Exactly. So what was your memory of it, Anthony?
I was just going to say one thing there. Just when you said about phones, you were in Seville and everybody had mobiles, but the mobile network crashed because of the volume of calls.
That's right.
You couldn't get a call out, you couldn't get a text out. Guess who I didn't meet?
The person with the ticket.
No, Big Sharpie, didn't see him.
That's why we lost. It's your fault.
I always say I never saw him before the game. That was eating me, getting into the ground. I never saw Big Al. And it was in my head from the start of the game that I hadn't seen him. So there you go.
Your memories of it?
There isn't many of them, because I mean, I'm not a guy that mixes booze and football, but on that rare night when we played Boa Vista, it was a big catch up with pals in Glasgow, so it turned into my first ever big night out in Glasgow, so I don't know, Sucky Hall Street and all that shite, but I don't remember much of it because I was ball bagged. It was obviously a happy night, it was a good night, but I don't remember much of it. The last two notes I've got are quite happy ones. Paul Elliott was the pundit in the studio, and he was like legitimately ecstatic. Like, he couldn't have been happier. Celtic have got to a European final. This is just magnificent for Scottish football, for Celtic, for everyone. And next to him, mentioned earlier, Gordon Smith. I've just written dead inside.
So with that, we'd done the Boa Vista game. We've obviously got to pick our song of the time. So, In Da House, what's the song that we get?
In Da Club has a double meaning. We're European finalists. We're in Da Club.
I wouldn't pick a song from 2003.
So what would you pick?
I would pick the song Columbia by Oasis, which obviously was 9 or 10 years before that we belted out in the car on the way back from Blackburn and Liverpool.
Alright, okay, so when you wonder why that was at the start, you'll know by the time it's on at the end. And with that, I will say Remy and Anthony, thanks very much.
Cheers.
Thanks very much, thanks for having me. It's been an enjoyable hour. Thanks a lot, guys.
Oh, you enjoyed that rundown memory lane with Remy and Anthony. We've got more of these coming up. We've got 1980 St Mirren. We've got the invincible treble winning season from somebody who was inside Celtic at the time. We've got lots of Tyrrell Innsbruck. We've got various games coming up. 10 men win the league and others. So if you want to get your memory on, email podcasts@CelticUnderground.net. That's podcast plural, CelticUnderground.net. Anything else you want to do, commenting on iTunes, rate us on iTunes, continue with the It's No Bad ratings on wherever. Thanks everyone for taking the time to download and listen. We will also have podcasts that are about the new manager, who will hopefully be appointed within the next 10 days. I'm just picking that date at random. Anyway, enough of me. That was Remy and Anthony. That was the Boa Vista game. And this is me, Harry Beattie, saying goodnight and God bless. Goodnight.